We didn't quite finish up the glycogenolysis chapter. We were on slide 11, and we've already covered this, but it's worth quickly going through this again to understand what's happening. The goal here is to control phosphorylase, glycogen phosphorylase, which is the main enzyme for glycogenolysis, remember. And remember, it can be in any one of four states, A or B, each of which has R and T. And the A form is much more active than the B form. So if glycogenolysis is called for, that means you want to have glycogen phosphorylase in the A form. It is in the A form when it's phosphorylated. Okay, so the glycogen phosphorylase has to be phosphorylated to be phosphorylase A. And the kinase, whose job it is to phosphorylate phosphorylase, is phosphorylase kinase. Okay? That kinase itself can be phosphorylated in order to activate it. That's one way of activating it. The other way is for calcium ions to bind to one of its subunits. So remember, there are alpha, beta, gamma, delta subunits, four of each of those in the overall phosphorylase kinase enzyme. The delta subunits are where the calcium ions can bind. So if they do, that partly activates phosphorylase kinase. Phosphates, phosphoryl groups, can be added to the beta subunits. And if that happens, that partly activates phosphorylase kinase. And if they both happen, phosphorylation and binding of calcium ions, then phosphorylase kinase is really active. And it therefore does its job well of phosphorylating phosphorylase, turning it into phosphorylase A, which now is a really active enzyme to do its job of breaking glycogen down. Okay? To get glucose out of it. Well, what is it that phosphorylates phosphorylase kinase so that it can phosphorylate phosphorylase? Protein kinase A, which is a versatile kinase, does all kinds of things, and we'll talk more about it in the next chapter. Okay. Is that all straight? Or it will be? Alpha is a structural subunit. There might be something, even some other allosteric thing that can bind to alpha. I'm not sure, but it's neither one of these things. The calciums are on the deltas, the phosphoryls are on the betas. Okay, let's go to 12 then to finish the chapter up. A couple more slides. This little blood vessel here represents the overall bloodstream. And notice the situation here. Fasting or exercise at the top. Either one of those, or both, are situations in which you want to mobilize some glucose, right? By mobilize, I mean get it out of storage. In other words, these are situations that call for glycogenolysis. Because if you're fasting, you're not bringing in new glucose. If you're exercising, you're using a lot of glucose as fuel. So it makes sense to take some out of storage. All right, well, in response to fasting, because of the drop in blood glucose levels that fasting will result in, because you're not bringing in any from the gut, the pancreas senses the low blood glucose level and responds by secreting glucagon, one of its two major glucose-related hormones, right? So you see glucagon entering from the pancreas into the bloodstream. The glucagon reaches the liver and has the effect of increasing glycogenolysis, which is represented by pathway one, right? From glycogen to glucose. That's glycogenolysis. Epinephrine does the same thing. Epinephrine is a totally different signal, though. And epinephrine is released into the bloodstream in response to exercise, for one thing. Or being scared, or being stressed. Epinephrine is a short-term stress hormone. What is the other name for epinephrine? Adrenaline, right. They both mean the same thing. Epinephrine means above the kidneys, as adrenal does as well, above the kidneys. That's where the gland is, the adrenal glands. And in response to exercise or fright, excitement, epinephrine gets added to the bloodstream. And the liver receives both of these signals. They'll both increase glycogenolysis. Now, the exercise itself is going to, if it's strenuous, outpace the ability of the cardiovascular system, or the circulatory system, I should say, to bring enough fuel to these muscles that are working. And therefore, they're going to at least partially be anaerobic, right? Fermentation will produce lactate anaerobically, right? Lactate is leaving these muscles that are producing it and being delivered to the liver. What does the liver do with the lactate? Something we've already covered. Lactate to glucose is what? Pathway. Gluconeogenesis, exactly. The liver receives the lactate that the muscles are producing because they don't have enough oxygen to produce, to process the pyruvate aerobically, and then using that to produce new glucose, which is also appropriate in this situation, right? The epinephrine, by the way, that is a result of starting to exercise, is going to ramp up glycogenolysis in the muscle cells. Remember, the muscles are another major site of a lot of glycogen stores. So they have glycogen on hand, but remember, their glycogen is for them only, whereas the liver's glycogen is for the rest of the body. So in response to the liver receiving glucagon and epinephrine, the glucose that's liberated because of glycogenolysis gets delivered back into the bloodstream, whereas the epinephrine that ramps up glycogenolysis in muscle cells liberates the glucose from the glycogen, but it stays in those muscle cells for those muscle cells to use as their own fuel. It doesn't get put into the bloodstream. Okay, that's everything there, and let's go to the slide 13, which I think is the last slide, and look at the signal transduction pathway that controls this. Now, hopefully, you remember from 181 the basics of G protein-mediated signal transduction pathways. A G protein, I mean, there's a lot of different pathways that use G-proteins. But a G-protein is a type of, a G-protein-coupled receptor, I should say, is a type of receptor that can receive a signal from outside the cell, and in this case, epinephrine or glucagon are the receptors, I mean, are the signals. The transmembrane portion of the G-protein-coupled receptor is the part that actually receives the signal itself. So the signal is acting as a ligand, either glucagon or epinephrine is a chemical signal. The binding of that ligand to the exterior part of the G protein coupled transmembrane receptor is going to cause a conformational change in that receptor such that the G protein itself, which is associated with the cytosolic portion of this transmembrane receptor, will be released temporarily. Well, temporarily dismantled and released. So there's an alpha, beta, gamma subunit on a G protein in general, not just for this example. And associated with the alpha subunit is a GDP molecule. This is how the G protein is in its inactive state. In response to the signal, the ligand binding to the outside of the cell, the alpha separates from the beta and gamma, plus that conformational change that results from that allows for a fresh GTP to come in and displace the GDP. That's why you have GTP here. This GDP is gone. It gets kicked off. And that GTP coming into the now lone alpha subunit activates that alpha subunit to do whatever it does, which depends on the particular pathway. This is how this is the general basics of any G protein coupled receptor. In this case, when we're talking about its control of glycogenolysis, epinephrine or glucagon are the signals, and that activated alpha protein of the G protein, that alpha subunit, will, once activated, migrate along the interior surface of the plasma membrane and meet up with and activate a membrane-bound enzyme called adenylate cyclase. Now, this is also a often used intermediate in a G-protein-coupled response. So all this stuff at the top is true of a lot of different signal transduction pathways, not just this one. Adenylate cyclase's job, though, is to produce cyclic AMP, which is why it's called adenylate cyclase. Cyclic AMP is produced out of ATP, but it's called cyclic AMP because you take two of those phosphates off of the ATP and then join the phosphate, which is already connected to the adenosine. You join another part of that phosphate back to the same adenosine, forming a little ring, which is why it's called cyclic AMP. That's what we have happening right here. ATP is being transformed into cyclic AMP under the enzymatic control of adenylate cyclase, which wasn't active until the G protein activated it. And the G protein wasn't activated until glucagon or epinephrine came along from the outside of the cell. All right? So at this point, we have cyclic AMP. That's now, the green here versus pink means activated form. So cyclic AMP, now that it exists, can do its job of activating protein kinase A, which we've already talked about, but this is showing you how protein kinase A gets activated to begin with. Okay? Once protein kinase A is activated, it does what we've already discussed. It phosphorylates phosphorylase kinase, the one in the previous slide, activating it so that it can do its job of phosphorylating glycogen phosphorylase, transforming it from B to A form, where it then does its job of breaking apart glycogen one glucose residue at a time. Okay? So all parts of that cascade make sense? The reason I say it's a cascade, by the way, is because even though it's shown here just happening one time at each step, a single activated alpha subunit in response to a single epinephrine molecule, for instance, will stick around in the activated form for a while. It eventually will turn itself off by cleaving off one of the phosphates of the GTP, and it'll come back into the inactive form. But while it's still active, it can activate several different adenylate cyclases, each of which, while they're active, can activate several different cyclic AMPs. and so on. So each step of the pathway, there's an amplification of the signal. And in very short order, a tiny amount of signal originally, glucagon or epinephrine, can cause a great number of phosphorylase enzymes to be activated. And therefore, a lot of glycogen can be degraded in short order. Okay? That's that chapter. Yeah, go ahead. This one, 12.
What did you say happens when,
Right. When you, if you suddenly start exercising pretty vigorously, your circulatory system is going to still be in rest mode, basically, kind of just idling, delivering low level of oxygen with a low flow of blood flow because it doesn't know you're exercising yet. And your muscles are going to immediately use up a lot of energy stores and they're going to go at least partially anaerobic because you don't have, the blood is not bringing enough oxygen to those now very active muscles to process all of the fuel through cellular respiration. So some of that glucose, some of the pyruvate that the glucose is going to be transformed into by glycolysis is going to have to go down the anaerobic pathway, which is fermentation. That's going to transform it into lactate, right, in order to reoxidize the NADH into NAD+. And that lactate, then, is what I was saying, will leave those muscles where it's created, go through the bloodstream to the liver, which then uses it as the raw material to build new glucose via gluconeogenesis, like we've already talked about in another chapter. Okay? Mm-hmm. Anyone else before we go? All right.